On this episode of Roots, Race, and Culture,
we'll dive into Utah's deep Hispanic roots.
At one point or another, our history brings us together. Mm. That is the magic of Utah.
This is the land, the nation of the immigrants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The United States is an experiment, and we better work together or we're gonna disappear together.
As always, we welcome you on Roots, Race, and Culture.
Funding for Roots, Race, and Culture is provided in part by the Norman C. and Barbara L. Tanner Charitable Support Trust and by donations to PBS Utah from viewers like you. Thank you.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Roots, Race, and Culture, where we bring you into candid conversations about shared cultural experiences. I'm Lonzo Liggins.
And I'm Daynor Gerald. Thanks for joining us. Today, we're diving into the story of Latinos in Utah. From railroad laborers and miners in the early 1900s to thriving entrepreneurs, educators, artists, and political leaders, Latinos are rewriting Utah's cultural and economic landscape.
So where did their story begin? What challenges and successes define the Hispanic community in Utah? And how does their culture shape Utah's past, present, and future? Joining us, we have two guests to help us understand this group's contributions to our state. Welcome. We have Professor Armando Solorzano, and we have Lorena Rifo Jensen. Lorena, introduce yourself.
Thank you so much for having me. Lorena Rifo Jensen, and I'm the Director of Economic Development for Salt Lake City. And I'm so passionate about our city.
We're excited to hear about it.
Thank you.
Professor, tell us about yourself.
Thank you so much for opening the space and the time to share with the whole state and hopefully the nation and the world mm-hmm. of presence in this beautiful state. Yes, my name is Armando Solorzano, and I have been at the University of Utah for 37 years in the Department of Ethnic Studies. And since I came here, I started looking deeply into the history of Mexican, Hispanics, Latinos in the state of Utah, which also brought me to study the history of the African Americans in the state. At the same time, I looked at the indigenous population, the Navajo, the Ute, the Goshutes, and put the whole thing together in a way that makes sense for all of us to understand that we belong here.
And you've written a few books. One of the most well-known books that you've written is, we actually have a copy of it here. It's called We Remember, We Celebrate, We Believe, Recuerdo, Celebración y Esperanza Latinos in Utah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it basically covers the history and the beginning, as well as what Hispanics do in Utah today. So we're excited to talk about some of that history today. But before we do, let's start with you, Lorena. Tell us a little bit about your work that you do with the city.
Well, as the Director of Economic Development, we have an incredible team of professionals. And our goal is to ensure that we support our local economy, neighborhood economy, but also we do recruitment, retention, and expansion of large companies like BioMaria. We work with Stryker, just to mention a few. And we ensure that we work with the Salt Lake City School District so there's a pathway for our students to look into careers, opportunities, and ensure that if they want to stay in Salt Lake City, they can, because the jobs are here for them.
Wow, that's great. So now, just to clarify for my own well-being here, this is for just the city of Salt Lake City,
correct.
Or is it the whole county, the valley? Like, tell me a little bit.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. It's actually Salt Lake City is Salt Lake City Corporation, but we do work very closely with the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity. And then we, of course, work with our peers. Other cities also have directors of economic development, and we work with them because we also believe that probably not everything will be in Salt Lake City. And we want to make sure that, you know, our neighbor cities are also partaking of some of the great opportunities we have economically.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Your work is very important.
Well, I believe so. I think our work as a society is very important when it comes to the economy.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And now I have a quote from Professor Solórzano's book, and I want you to comment on it, okay? Now, it says, erasure is a form of violence. Recognition is its healing. Remembering is an act of justice. Can you break that down for us and tell us what that means for you?
Yeah. It was, well, my first encounter when I came to Utah, and this general tendency to deny the history of Mexican, Hispanic, Latinos in the state, which again, it contrasts with much understanding and learning of history in Mexico, since at the age of 5 years old, I learned that Utah was part of the Mexican territory.
Yeah, this was Mexico before, before it was Utah.
So it was this, psychologists call cognitive dissonance, meaning that what you know in your inside and who you are doesn't match with the outside. So again, being in Utah and continuously hearing, oh, you just arrived, you just came, it did not match my experience. And because we do have a history, I want to clarify that. What we need is people who write the history. But since we haven't been written it for different reasons, so people don't know it, so they deny it.
Right.
When
right.
in fact, and by denying the history, they deny ourselves. So again, writing the book, it was more like a moral responsibility to my people, to my community, and to myself. Because if I'm in this position as a scholar, as a PhD, it owes to the community. I cannot never make it to the university by myself. Given the situation. So I felt this responsibility to the community, not to make the history, because they already made the history, but just have the energy, the inspiration, the challenge to write it.
That's good.
And we should write it, again, remember everybody that we are not immigrants. That we never came here. America came to us.
Yes, and there's a history, you know, a long history of basically Hispanics in Utah. It didn't just start, I mean, not only was it their country, but there's a part of us, part of a Hispanics building Utah. Can you tell us just a little bit about that?
Yeah, and if you allow me, I can go back, you know, because we are a mestizo people. We are the putting together of the indigenous people and the European people who came to this land, right? In the case of the Spaniards, they mix. That's where the word mixture come from. So, and again, in that mixture, I need to take and attend to my indigenous roots. And our mythologies, or cosmologies, if you want to call it that way, envision the place, the land of Aztlán in this area. This is the Aztlán, this is the land of the sacred people. This is the land that the goddess gave to the people. So again, our sense of identity comes through the land. You take the land from us, you take our identity. And that is something that historically we are not gonna allow, right? And we are not claiming that we own the land. In our mythologies, nobody owns the lands. The lands belong to the Great Spirit. We are here to take care of it and share it. So when this group of Europeans came to us, it was an opportunity for us to share it with them, but remind them, right? Yes, you were invited. Some. Some of the groups were brought here by force, and you are aware of that. But it's still, if you are here with us sharing, we just ask to respect our dignity and again, our sincerity when we talk to you.
Yeah, yeah, and I want to delve so much deeper into the history of it. Lorena, you grew up in Chile, but you moved here.
I did.
How old were you when you moved here?
I was almost 14. Mm-hmm. My parents came to Utah, and it was a very different place.
Tell us about that. Tell us how different it was then compared to now.
Oh, my goodness. It's a different world, I would say. First of all, there was fewer Latinos. Mm-hmm. I think we were looking in the 80s about 30,000.
Mm-hmm. Is that in the whole state or just in Salt Lake?
I believe that was the entire state. However, the data, collection of data is up to who is collecting the data.
Right.
I'm sure the professor would agree with me on that. Mm-hmm. So this, to me, was a new place. Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful place, but it was a very hard place. Mm. At the time, even though I lived in a country where doctors, engineers were part of the government, the Latino experience was one where I was actually placed in resources because I didn't speak English, although I grew up speaking Spanish and French. Mm-hmm. And there was just the limitations that they were being put upon me. Mm. I think the one thing that I was very fortunate is my experience to have lived in Chile, where I could see professionals mm-hmm. that looked like me. Mm-hmm. I remember being in high school and some of my counselors telling me, I kept telling them, I'm going to be a lawyer. And they kept saying, it was like they looked at me like you talked about cognitive dissonance with that look. And school is always something very important to me. I grew up, education was something I didn't learn here, but rather in Chile. And of course, I went to law school, got my master's in public health at the University of Utah. I'm a graduate of the University of Utah and BYU. Mm-hmm. And so my experience has been very different. I must say that I have learned immensely from one of my dearest friends, I call her my sister, Dr. Teresa Martinez, who is mm-hmm. an institution in this university, mm-hmm. and she has shared with me the Mexican American experience, and there's so much resiliency in that story. There is so much power, strength, but also pain, because we tend to do something. We don't recognize people's assets. And when you don't recognize assets, you don't recognize what they bring to the table.
Their value, yeah.
And that takes us to history, right?
Yeah. I want to ask a quick question for both of you that's kind of historically related. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a moment where a story was told to you or you discovered in your research about Latino history, specifically in Utah, if you can, that really was a big shift for you, that changed your outlook, your perspective, your understanding, and maybe drove you to do something differently than you would have thought? Is there something that you discovered about the past and, you know, that can help us understand that?
Yes, going a little bit back to what Lorena has said here, because it's very important even to the question you addressed before. And the reason, what are the things that are covered or denied within the history of Hispanic or Latinos or Mexicans? And one of them are, what you just mentioned, Lorena, the issue of statistics, how they counted us. Mm-hmm. To start with, we are not counted. And I'm talking about the 19th century. I mean, right there in 1910. In Utah, there were only four racial or ethnic categories. White, black, Japanese, and indigenous, and Indians. Mm-hmm. There was not a category for Mexicans.
Wow.
And we were here already. We knew we were here.
Did they just lump you in with the Indians?
Thank you. Yes, that is the correct answer. And why with the Indians? And it has to do with the whole mythology and theology of the state. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's fine. We respect that. But at the same time, respect means also claiming the right of who we are. Mm. And one of the rights we have is to be counted.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And if we don't exist in the census, then we don't exist for the whole population.
Yeah. And you get erased from history, effectively.
Right. And again, there has been this effort to recognition just in numbers. Mm-hmm. Lorena was talking about no quantity, but the quality of who we are as human, as people, with a very rich history, which again connect me to a lot of stories. I remember when my kid was in elementary school and the teacher called me and he said, oh, congratulations, your son is very good in mathematics. And I say, why is that a surprise to you? He's a descent from the Aztecs. We were the only one who created the zero in any numerical system. What is that so surprise? And he said, because I know that is important to you. I said, no, I don't care much about how good he is in mathematics. My question is, how is connecting to everybody in the class? How is he respecting you? How is recognizing people of diverse background? And the teacher said, why is that important to you? I said, because I'm a member of the cosmic race. And like Lorena beautifully said, you know, the first two languages, Spanish and French, something that people don't even imagine because all then assume that we talk in Spanish. That's wrong. Like in my case, at the age of 5 years, I spoke Latin. It became all, and where is that, right? I mean, where is all that rich recognition?
Right.
And so coming back to your idea, where do I discover that something was not clicking or something that it really pushed me to not to create the history, but bring the history alive.
Bring it to life and to show it.
Present.
Yeah, to show it.
And when, again, I came to Utah to teach, the first thing was to visit the historical sites and the historical markers. And just for 2 weeks, I lived with the youths in the reservation.
Wow.
So I want to know. I mean, if you're going to teach in the state,
you
need to know. And my first surprise was when I went to the Capitol. Beautiful building, by the way, gorgeous building. But then I look at the rotunda, the highest part, and I start looking at the paintings. Like you say, Lorena, it was painful.
Yeah.
It was a painful experience to see. I don't want to monopolize the conversation, but I am.
No, tell me about the paintings. What?
Like, for instance, there are several. One of them, it was the pioneers. It has the date, 1847, planting the U.S. flag in the land. Well, that was Mexico. Utah, or this territory, became part of the United States in 1848.
Yeah.
And then I said, how can I interpret this, right? Because remember, the history is written by the winners, by the one in the power. So if you are planting a flag in a territory that is not yours, what can you make out of that? But so, even when I went to, I'm gonna stop here, which is not true. When I went to Farmington, you know the place right up there to the north, and you enter the town, it has a big plaque. It said, Farmington, this city was created in 1847, when it was Mexico.
Wow.
I felt I belong here. This is our land.
I agree, and there's a great book by Howard Zinn called The People's History of the United States, where he talks about, you know, telling history from the perspective of Native Americans, from Hispanics, from Blacks. But I'm interested to hear your answer to Dana's question.
It's a very interesting question. I think for me, it's I'm going to kind of flip the question around.
Okay.
Because one of the things, and just kind of following up on Professor Solorzano discussion, I would say one of the things, you know, my parents came, political asylees in the United States. So I have incredible gratitude for that. It's a very hard to leave your place, your home, and go to a new place. But what was interesting for me from the onset, it was kind of, we talked about recognizing our indigenous tribes that were here, recognizing that Mormon pioneers were being persecuted, and they found a place of peace in Mexico. And I have always said this is makes Utah a very special place, and we shouldn't forget our history, because as a young woman, as a political asylee to this country, naturalized citizen, I feel that that is the magic of Utah, is accepting that at one point or another, our history brings us together, because we were running from persecution, some of us, not all of us. And for me, I have, my goal has always been to make a difference. I mentioned at the onset that I love the city, and I do, and I love Utah, and I love the United States. And I do want to say that we can do better every day. And some of the political divisiveness today, in my world, there's no room for that. And Utah needs to be the example for the country.
Let's talk about Utah being the example for the country. Right now, a very big topic that's going on is immigration.
Yes.
And how is immigration impacting your community today in modern history? I want to definitely get your take, but I just want to jump in because she works for the city and grab her take real quick, but I want your take as well. How is it impacting your work today?
Well, I would say Salt Lake City is very diverse. And not all of us are immigrants. I mean, my friends who are Mexican Americans have always been here, as they tell me. But we all have family members that may be permanent residents. And when you hear some of the things happening out there, and you know, having gone through a process of waiting 8 years to have my political asylum, waiting 5 more years to become a citizen, it takes time. So it affects all of us. It affects our community. And as our country becomes, as we come together, we marry and we have children, many of our children are multiracial. And I think the United States of America will continue to become that. So I don't think it's just affecting the Latino community. I think it's affecting everyone who has a family member in some fashion, whether it's through marriage, you know, that may be maybe a permanent resident, maybe may be undocumented. But I think it also, and I don't want to derail the conversation, but I think the economics.
Yeah, I want to hear about that.
I think it affects immensely the economics of our state, our nation.
In what way? Tell me.
Well, when you hear people being nervous, they're not going to go to the store if they're nervous. So they're not going to go shopping.
Or go to work in some cases.
Yes, which, but it's not everyone. I want to make sure that this is a segment of our population. But the fear, the concern for our neighbors, I think it exists.
And you feel this
report from the Utah School District. This year, it has the lowest
attendance,
enrollment, and the number of students diminished 17% in the state of Utah, and we attribute it in part to what Lorena is saying.
Immigration policy.
People are afraid. And that has a strong repercussion because our state already is one of the less educated in the nation. And if we continue with this trend, what kind of state, what kind of nation are we building? What has distinguished
it definitely weakens the nation.
How has it impacted your job with teaching?
Oh, it's absolutely. Like right now, again, the enrollment of minority students, you want to call them, at the U, diminish. Mm-hmm. So you don't find that rich environment in the classroom. Mm-hmm. You start on meeting, your question, then we start at the very onset. You start on meeting, denying our participation. How, you know, our students, our people, are enriching the whole cultural and even the religious life of the whole state.
Yes, mm-hmm. The whole community, yeah.
The whole community. Yeah. And when you raise the question about immigration, the first thing to came to my mind was this very famous citation from one of the greatest historians in the United States, Hanley, who said, when I started writing the history of the United States, I didn't realize that I was writing the history of immigration. Because we tend to forget that this is the land, the nation of the immigrants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The United States is an experiment.
Yes. Yeah.
The only one in the world. And we better work together or we're gonna disappear together.
That's a really powerful and significant point. I mean, you're talking about stuff at the level that's fundamental to the existence of the country. And one thing that I find that's kind of interesting, and we're gonna talk about kind of, I'm gonna answer your question, how does it affect our job? We can tell you this, many topics that we cover are about people of color and all sorts of communities and genders and all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And recently I have found that it has been more difficult to get people to come on the show, not just Latino or anything like that, just across the board out of what you just mentioned, out of fear. Mm-hmm. People are afraid of letting their face be seen, letting their voice be heard,
and authenticity. Yeah, though.
And it's really disheartening. It's troubling that people don't feel like it's safe to be visible.
I got this.
And so we've struggled.
Do you feel like that's the case?
Yes, I do think I talked to several friends of mine who work with Latino businesses. Mm-hmm. I have the honor to serve as the chair of the Suazo Business Center, which is named after our former Senator Pete Suazo.
Pete Suazo, yes.
People that work with communities that are being singled out are very tired because it affects everything. It affects their decision whether you're gonna grow as a business. Mm. What Professor Solorzano just mentioned that has a huge economic impact, if students are not going to school because there's an element of fear, because of the way you look, you may be stopped and you just don't want to have to prove that or have your passport and your purse or briefcase or backpack, it affects our ability to recruit companies, because companies do ask, what is your diversity in the state of Utah, in Salt Lake City? And furthermore, they want to know where their workforce is coming from. And they want to know that, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now, they're going to have a well-trained workforce. And if we don't have students attending their schools, it has an impact in our community. I spent Monday morning in Japantown, and
I want to know where that is.
Oh, Japantown!
It's like down.
Yes. And that's probably another conversation you need to have with the Japanese community, Japanese American community. Yep. And I was so touched. There's the Buddhist. Temple, and then there is the Christian church right there, and they work side by side. But there's stories about many of them, their family members were in camp.
The Topaz.
And having to, and I connected with their story of having to leave your place, your home, because of political, racial persecution. Yeah. It's about time that we learn from our mistakes.
Yeah.
Well, how much, when we talk about economic impact, how much of an economic impact does the Hispanic community have in the state of Utah? And not only that, but I also want to touch on the wonderful contributions that the Hispanic culture actually brings to Utah. Yeah. But can we talk about the economics first?
The numbers that I've looked is across the state is about $3 billion in buying power.
Wow.
Absolutely.
We have an incredible partnership with the Suazo Business Center. They support our all businesses, but of course, because of Suazo, a lot of Latino owned businesses obtain their technical support there. The goal of that organization is to create wealth in our Latino communities so we can grow and be part of this beautiful American dream, if we can all share that dream.
What are some businesses, whether historically or in present day, that have thrived for people in the Latin community in Utah? What are some businesses like?
Well, we, and this is a very well-known fact, since the Olympic Games in 2002.
Yes.
Remember, we have that day, a day without Mexican.
Yes.
You remember that?
Oh, I wasn't.
All workers, Latino workers, decided not to work one day. The whole hotel industry.
Oh, hospitality.
Came down.
Wow.
The whole restaurant industry.
Yeah.
The whole tourism industry came down. And again, we are not claiming, right, centrality in the economic system. What we are saying that any economic system should be based on equal basis, right? Redistribution of resources. And the understanding of who we are together. Like, for instance, Lorena, I think you just hit the mark. The issue of the immigration impacts not only what we do in Utah, but let me give you an example. During the construction of I-15.
I remember that.
Okay? The majority of workers were Mexican Latinos. Again, we can use any other name. More importantly, 85% of the cement that came to the state of Utah came from Mexico.
Really?
Absolutely.
Wow.
And there are some studies already done by the Department of Economics that point that out.
Wow.
In the terms of education, there was so complaint and concern that the children of the immigrants are taking over the school system, which is not true. I mean, we are not just taking over. It's the whole logic of the growth of the state. And it's true. Like for instance, the 58% of all children in the educational system in the Salt Lake School District, 58 are Latinos. Okay, the same happened with the Ogden School District.
Wow.
Right? And I know there were concerns, but we tend to forget that by 1998, the books that we were using in Utah for our children were given by Mexico. Mexico sent the textbook to Utah. It's a very strong sense of cooperation.
No one knows this stuff.
Well, if you look at the issue of immigration, and I don't want, again, as always, to monopolize, because again, Lorena, probably you share with us that we need a space. Like, thank you for the one that you are providing to let everybody know what's going on. In the issue of immigration, if you want to combine Utah with Mexico, again, not only in terms of individuals or people, but in terms of institutions, we have to understand, right, that, for instance, immigration of the LDS people to Mexico has been important. Let me give you an example. In 1894, 96, when Utah was declared the state of the United States.
Yeah, they got statehood, yeah.
Right. Some brothers and sisters of the LDS religion did not live the polygamous.
Oh, right, right, the polygamy
state
thing,
of mind. Yeah. What do? They immigrate to Mexico.
Oh, that's right.
And they create the colonies in Chihuahua. Beautiful. So we're talking about continued immigration. Immigration is alive for our brothers and LDS people. They were living in peace. Came the revolution of 1910 in Mexico, and the LDS people who created they were, like you mentioned in Lorena, they were pushed out of Mexico. So they had to go back again, immigrating, because those LDS were Mexicans. But now they were immigrating to the United States. So immigration is a very fluid, alive condition.
It's an ongoing.
It's a fluid thing. Yeah, it's a fluid thing. And it's like I-15. It goes both ways.
Let me ask you both some questions. What are some myths that people have about the Latino community that are just myths?
That we're all immigrants. Some of us are immigrants. I would put myself in that category. You know, that we all speak Spanish. You know, I have been, that was my first language, but I have friends who are third or fourth generation, and they don't. And I just think that, you know, that we all are in the, that all of our work is in the area of limited area, I would say, and not expansive, like, you know, we're not attorneys, we're not
professors,
economic development, engineers. It's just, I don't know, I think sometimes whatever they see in the films, whatever, however you are being presented, is their idea of who we are.
Well, I mean,
there's
I would
such richness that's brought into
how many people are probably watching right now going, I don't think this might be the first Latin professor of a university that they've ever seen. You might be the first Latina female working for the government, the Economic Office of Development, that they have ever seen. And so for you guys to be here says something. It shows something to the children and to adults that they, like you said, they probably have not seen before. But I just want to go, that statistic you said, those statistics about I-15, I think we need to change the name to I-15. Because
that's funny.
Mexico had a lot to do with that highway getting here.
You know, going back of the issue of the stereotype is the one that the presence of Latinos or Mexicans in the state happened since 1990. Absolutely wrong.
Yeah.
We were here 2,000 years before the pioneers, and that has been proved in our relationship with other indigenous groups, especially with the Utes. We spoke what is called the Ute Aztec language with words. Another misconceptions about us, and that all Latinos in Utah our LDS is the opposite. 85% of Latinos in Utah are Catholics.
Oh, yeah.
And that precisely opened a new study by Georgetown University here in Utah. And it's one of the books that I also write. I'll give you a copy later. And the whole idea of Georgetown University was how in a state who in its majority is represented by people of the LDS faith, is integrating this new wave of Catholic immigrants. It's a beautiful, beautiful study, right? And then we have to go through history, and we uncover that, you know, Latinos, Mexicans, Hispanic, of the LDS faith and the Catholic faith, they always been working together. That for us, again, religion is respected.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
We come from different roots. That's what makes our community so beautiful. Right? And we discovered that, for instance, in the celebration of you know, the masses of the services, the LDS people with their guitars were to sing for in the Catholic Mass.
Oh.
And once the Catholic Mass was done, the Catholics went to the LDS services. Mm-hmm. What was important for us was this sense of, regardless of our religion, we have the same God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or goddess. Well, I'm not going to go there yet, but
I would support that.
And we do with the representation of the Virgin of Guadalupe,
yeah,
which is fascinating
right.
To me.
That's
right?
Great.
Because when I go and visit my brothers and sisters of the LDS religion, they have the Virgin, some of them,
yeah,
the Virgin of Guadalupe
course.
In the living room.
Yeah.
It's a
wow.
So, but again, go ahead.
I just wanted to clarify, present day, what are some of the barriers that some entrepreneurs, Hispanic entrepreneurs might face when it comes to starting businesses?
I would say that we see is, and this is not just specific to Latinos, mm-hmm, but I think to a lot of our diverse communities, access to capital.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Salt Lake City has an economic development loan fund,
mm-hmm,
where if you're a local business, you know, we will work with you, get you ready to, you know, provide you with technical assistance so you can learn and be ready and join our neighborhood economy by opening your doors in Salt Lake City.
Mm.
So I would say number one is access to capital. Mm-hmm. To open, you know, let's talk about a coffee shop or a restaurant. There's so many steps to do that. You have to deal. Let's say you're going to open your little, cafecito, and you need to get permits. You need to, if you're a restaurant, you have to have a grease trap. Those are very expensive.
Mm.
For us, and that's what I said at the beginning, is we can walk side by side with you as a department, as a team, through this process. And then we also are dealing with multi-billion dollar international companies like Stryker.
Yeah.
But I would say is the know-how. And one of my goals and in my conversations with our great mayor is to ensure that at the point of entrance, we create access and we create it in a way that whether you are, it doesn't matter from where, you can go to one place and find the information how to do business in Salt Lake City.
Hmm. I wanna just throw a bug in here. You probably maybe already know about this, but we did an episode about black wealth, and there is a bank that opened in Holiday,
yes,
Utah, Redemption,
yes,
Bank, and I think that
very proud of,
yes,
the black community.
Yes, but
closely.
That's what I'm saying. They want to be Sweden. They don't care if,
yes,
you're black. If you,
yes,
have a great idea and you're willing to bet on,
oh,
yourself,
wonderful,
they got capital for you and they'll work really well with you and your team. So
yeah,
that's
and,
awesome.
And you can find similar examples in our community. I'm going to mention the Rico,
oh,
family.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The one that produced the salsa.
Mm-hmm.
And that economic success, again, was based on the community. They started just selling tamales.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, they are doing all these kinds, open a restaurant. Now it's an estate corporation. Beautiful.
I mean, Rancho Markets with Eli Madrigal.
Rancho Market.
Redihuana is,
yes,
well known.
And for us,
internationally
known,
yes,
at this point in time.
And for us, again, it goes beyond the business because it has community implications.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we just witnessed the closing of Mestizo Cafe,
mm-hmm,
which was a very important cultural center for,
mm-hmm,
us.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case, like for instance, all the Rico family, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at one of their sons. Now, he's a doctor. He's the most brilliant person I have seen studying medicine here. He was recruited then, I believe, in Boston. And now he's a doctor at Stanford University.
Wow.
So again, the implication of businesses, again, it expands to the whole community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that is the beauty of the Latino, that we don't look at just individual success.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We always ask,
the community.
But thank you, Lorena, mm-hmm. where is my community?
Yes.
I'm go here, yeah. as you said, as a professor, but all the effort was made by the community.
That's what I want
to the point that I need to pay back. And this is another yeah. point that probably we should address in another conversation, yeah. is the issue of remittances. So criticized in this country, right? But it's beneficial. It's the second income in Mexico, right? Mm-hmm. Well, where is it coming from? Well, as a professor, I have to share mm-hmm. with my family in Mexico.
Because
thanks to them. And in that sense, in that I think Lorena is right, we expanded the economy to two nations.
Right.
Mm. We are the
maybe even more now.
Well, see, but that's you bring up a really good point because, you know, within our community, within the Black community, you know, there's so many contributions that we bring to America that people overlook. They think about mm-hmm. some of the stereotypes, mm-hmm. but they, or, you mm-hmm. know, but they don't think about, you know, the beauty that we bring with music, with we bring mm-hmm. language, with we bring through the clothing,
medical,
just all of the different things that we bring in all different aspects. With your cultures, tell us more about that. Like what the beautiful and wonderful contributions. I mean, I could go on forever because I mean, I live in West Valley. I grew up in Utah, and I grew up around a lot of Hispanic people. And I just I love the culture, the cultural family, and just a lot of the traditions. But Lorena, tell us about some of that stuff.
Oh wow! I think culturally, it's seeing the world and its beauty, mm-hmm. and honoring our Mother Earth mm. with an incredible mm-hmm. respect. Mm-hmm. And I would say just the vibrancy of design, color, music. Mm-hmm. I grew up listening to jazz and knowing Billie Holiday before I moved to this country, and Louis Armstrong, and Nina Simone, and the opera. Just almost touching and searching all the time for the beauty, whether is, you know, bachata, cumbia, whether is something you would hear in a Cuban cafe, the guitar, I mean, the charanga for the Andes, of the people of the Andes. There's just so much beauty, and I would say is the beauty and the words. I mean, I think about all the poets, Pablo Neruda, Gabriel Mistral. You talk about the science that the Aztecs brought, mm-hmm. the Incas. I mean, it's, we have so much.
The art.
Yeah. yeah. And one of the writers, a Mexican-American writer, said that even if all the Hispanic, we jump up to the middle class of the upper class, still the big differences in the United States between Latinos and the rest is gonna be culture. Mm-hmm. It's a culture embedded in joy, no happiness. Mm. And that's a big distinction.
Yes. Mm?
The Constitution talk about happiness, that we have the right to be happy. But happiness is a very frugal, very fast, mm-hmm. enjoyable. Joy is internal predisposition of who we are. Mm-hmm. To enjoy even suffering. And I'm not saying we are masochists. I'm saying we know and we go through suffering because it's part of life, mm-hmm. right? But we transform into joy. We transform into flowers, mm-hmm. into dancing, mm-hmm. into the cycle of life, into, again, loving the land, Mama Pacha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right?
Mama Pacha.
And we suffer in Utah right now. Because what is going on with the Great Salt Lake? Mm.
Thank you for mentioning that.
And there are studies that it's going to cost us billions and billions of dollars in health. But we have been told for 1,000 years,
mm-hmm. well,
take care of the land. We are in pain because the state is contemplating bringing nuclear depositories in Tula. That hurts. Mm-hmm. But I have to walk with you. Do you agree? No. Mm. Because you are respecting a fundamental value, like you say, Lorena, or land, or motherland.
Mm.
Without land, you destroy land, we destroy ourselves.
Well, one thing that concerns me immensely, now just looking at the economics of the Great Salt Lake, we will not have the ability to do much economic development if our lake dries up. The University of Utah Law School had an article, the Law Review article, that talked about the millions of dollars just from securities, public companies that will have to disclose what's happening. So that's something that our leaders who are in a position of power, you know, they really need to be strong about their solutions, because this is a beautiful place. Mm-hmm. It's a place that is, for me, is my second home and my home, because, you know, I have a daughter and I will stay here, that we need to take care. So it does affect our economic development, but it also affects the spirit of our people. And that means, when I say people, I mean all of us in our state.
Yeah. And we tried to bring this conversation when the 2002 Olympic Games, right? When it was all this committee, and I was surprised that we were not invited. Mm. Neither the Latinos or the native groups around. Mm-hmm. Because I think they knew our position, that the Wasatch Front is a sacred place for us, right? Yeah, they were going to develop all this Olympic infrastructure, but destroying part of the environment. And I think they knew we were going to have a conversation about this, and we were not invited. Mm. We are still waiting for the invitation to be invited for the Olympic Winter Games, 2035?
Yeah, 34.
Can we talk?
And that's a whole different conversation. Yeah, but you know, we've come to the end here, guys. But I want to just before we go, just you know, a minute or less. What words of wisdom would you have for the young Latino generation that's coming up? What advice would you like to say to them?
I would say, love who you are. Mm-hmm. Cherish what comes through your family lines, your values, the knowledge. But remember that we're all coming together. And I tell my daughter, she is the bridge. Her father's side of the family happens to be Danish, and I'm Chilean. So I tell her she's the North and the South. So if we can find a way for our young people to do better than we have done, I think it would be very powerful.
I love that.
Oh, wow.
How about you, Professor?
In academia, we teach our students, our Latino students, that we always live in between. It's a very difficult place to live, mm-hmm. but probably is the most meaningful one, okay? We, like Lorena said, we are not only Europeans, we are Africans. Do not forget
yes.
that when the time on the Underground Railroad, a lot of Africans went to live in the south part of Mexico, okay? And they are with us. They are Mexican. They are African Mexicans. But to us, again, that is the beauty of growing up in Mexico, that we are the cosmic ray, and we ask our children, you are everything. You are everybody. You are the conglomeration of our race, that at the end of the day, all of us are just one.
I love that.
Carry, again, and I'm sorry to bring religion here, but when Pope Francis visited Mexico, one of the reporters in the airplane asked, why do you think the Mexican people suffer so much? And said, because they are the only one who continuously are saying yes to life, yes to include everybody. They are reminding them we all are just one. Mm-hmm. That, again, in probably that's what the history is calling us to do, being this conglomeration of all races, and of all races come just one. People call it the human race, but they say it so fast that they don't know what they're talking about without knowing that it's a process of life to bring us to that level of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And together, we can achieve it.
I just have to say, this has been one of the most beautiful and sacred shows that we have done. You have both brought wisdom, beauty, knowledge, understanding that is hard to find in this world at this time. And so I just want to thank you both very much.
Authentic and showing us the beauty of your cultures and the importance of it and the importance of how we humanize people in our society. And we see them as not just statistics or not just people who are immigrants or this or that, but they're human beings who contribute massively to the beauty of our of not only our nation, but to our state and to our city. So thank you so much for coming on.
From all of us at PBS Utah, thank you for joining this exciting and fascinating conversation. As always, other episodes can be found on our website, pbsutah.org/roots, or on the PBS Utah YouTube channel.
And if you have feedback or ideas for other episodes, be sure to give us a shout out on social media. Until next time, for Roots, Race, and Culture, y'all, we are out.
Funding for Roots, Race, and Culture is provided in part by the Norman C. and Barbara L. Tanner Charitable Support Trust and by donations to PBS Utah from viewers like you. Thank you.